Protecting our natural resources is a full-time and never-ending job. And today on the special edition of the West Side Outside, we'll speak with a panel of special guests who have continued to dedicate their lives to conservation efforts in Wisconsin and around the world. Joining me in the studio for this special edition of the West Side Outside, we've got outdoor guys Joe Knight, former editor of the outdoor section for the Eau Claire Leader-Telegram. Joe, welcome to the program.
Pleased to be here.
And Dave Carlson, outdoor writer as well, creator of the syndicated TV program Northland Adventure. Dave, welcome back.
Good morning. Glad to be here.
Glad to have you. For the first half of our program, we're going to discuss an international exchange program of sorts for conservation wardens from countries around the world in Africa and Southeast Asia. It's called the National Association of Conservation Law Enforcement Chiefs, and its goal is to strengthen relationships and bolster leadership in the fight against poaching and animal trafficking. We'll introduce the director, who has Wisconsin roots, in just a bit. But first, I want to hear from a testimonial from a participant in last year's Conservation Chiefs Academy. This is Christopher Fonamian, who is a conservator at a national park in Cameroon.
Wildlife does not belong to an individual. It belongs to the entire world. And therefore, it is important for all people to come together for a common good to ensure that that animal survive. Wildlife is a resource that we cannot afford to lose. Our forefathers left for us this resource to preserve it, to protect it. And we have a responsibility that we must also preserve it, protect it for the future generation. Personally, I will not say that any success can be attributed to an individual. Success is collective. There are a lot of hope because everybody all over the world is rallying behind the same. Without hope, we will not be doing what we are doing. There is hope because we've come together to preserve it. There is hope because we are fighting for a common goal. So there is hope for the survival of these animals. Hope is there for me, for you, for my children, and your children too. There is hope.
That was Christopher Fonamian. He is a conservator at a national park in Cameroon. Now I'd like to introduce our special guest for the first half of this hour's discussion. Also, a reminder, folks, if you want to listen or call into the program, give us a call at 1-800-228-5615. We'll be taking phone calls all hour. For the first half, we're talking about this National Association of Conservation Law Enforcement Chiefs. For the second half, we're going to be talking about a volunteer group called Green Fire. It's made up of retired scientists from the DNR and the UW, and their goal is to act as a watchdog group of sorts and help the DNR with staffing issues and help them augment their forces on the ground. But first, Randy Stark is the executive director of the National Association of Conservation Law Enforcement Chiefs. Prior to his current role, Randy was a top Department of Natural Resources game warden for Wisconsin. Randy Stark, welcome to the program.
Morning. Glad to be here.
Good to have you. So if you could give us a very brief answer to what is the International Conservation Chiefs Academy and how long has it been going on?
Yeah, the International Conservation Chiefs Academy started in 2016. So last year was the first year. This year will be the second year. And the impetus for it was obviously an increase in poaching of iconic species around the world, specifically African elephants, rhinos, pangolins. And the amount of poaching was up considerably. The populations of these species are dropping. And that, in connection with the amount of money that is involved in illegal trafficking of wildlife, and some argument that there's a connection to terrorism around the world, that some of that money was being diverted, has called into convocation countries and governments from around the world. And it all started in 2013 with a presidential order on illegal wildlife trafficking. And that order was in July of 2013. And then it's been continued under the current administration. And that resulted in the creation of the ICCA, the International Conservation Chiefs Academy, because one of the one of the demands of the presidential order was to increase the capacity to work together on illegal wildlife trafficking. And you heard Christopher very eloquently talk about that, that it's not one individual, it's everybody collectively coming together. So we set up the International Conservation Chiefs Academy with three basic goals. Number one, to create shared understanding across conservation law enforcement internationally about the problems associated with illegal wildlife trafficking. Number two, to strengthen international relationships, because, you know, I like to say, you know, it takes a network to beat a network. And the amounts of money involved in this is obviously brought in organized crime. They're very organized. And so it requires a network of people to be organized in order to kind of combat that. And the third element is adaptive leadership, in that to develop the leadership capacity internationally in the law and conservation law enforcement community, that's necessary to work across cultural differences, to change how people think about things, and make progress on this issue. So in a nutshell, there was the increased poaching, which precipitated the presidential order, which then the academy was one of the strategies to execute on that presidential order.
Randy, at the beginning of of this program, you mentioned pangolins among the iconic critters that are being poached. Now, public radio listeners are pretty sophisticated, but I'm betting not a lot of people know what a pangolin is.
I know what it is.
Can you explain what it is and why anyone would want to poach one of these things?
Sure, and maybe I shouldn't have lumped that in with the iconics, but a pangolin, I would say, if you think about, you know, Wisconsin, it's a slightly larger than a big possum or is a raccoon, and they have scales on them. And these scales are what traffickers are after. Is there's a demand for those scales for aphrodisiacs and other things that they use them for. And so it's the scales on the pangolins that are very valuable. And pangolins, when they are threatened, they tend to just roll up in a ball. So they're fairly easy to kind of collect, if you will, if you come across them, because their defense mechanism is to kind of roll up in a ball. So poachers that want to go out and get them and know how to get them, you can get a lot of them quickly. And if you look, there's been a number of very large pangolin scale seizures at ports, in Asian ports, incoming and then outgoing African ports. We're talking tens of thousands of scales and, you know, that represent thousands and thousands of animals.
Randy Stark, if I may be blunt here, how does a Wisconsin boy become the head of an international group like this? Were you contacted by the group or the president or what?
No. I was the chief warden in Wisconsin in that capacity. I was the president of the National Association of Conservation Law Enforcement Chiefs, NACLAC, which is an association of all the chiefs from each state in the country in the United States. And when I retired, the last year that I worked, we had a large national meeting, and we decided, you know, what is it we're going to do in the future? And we decided we really needed to focus on leadership development. So we created a National Conservation Law Enforcement Leadership Academy, and I run that. And we had run our first year of that in 2014. And at that time, like most things in life, I was sitting in the corner in the bar at Bill Woody, who was the chief of the Office of Law Enforcement of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service at the time, he and I were talking about the academy we just finished because we had collaborated very closely on it. And he said, hey, how about we try to do this on an international level? And so we sketched it out on the back of a napkin and started thinking about how it could all work. And so in my capacity as the executive director of NACLAC, and then working with closely with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and the State Department, INL, International Narcotics and Law Enforcement, that's a branch of the State Department, that focuses on international crime and specifically trafficking, whether it be wildlife trafficking, human trafficking, drug trafficking. And so the collaboration there between NACLAC, INL, and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has focused this effort on the International Chiefs Academy, focusing on illegal wildlife trafficking. And so that's how I got involved in it. It's kind of a long story, but kind of starts with the back of a napkin in the corner.
I like that.
For full disclosure, we should say that Randy has rounded up some people with a communication or journalism background to help get the message out about this, and I'm one of those people, so I'm not. He's kind of my boss, so I can't ask him any real hardball questions.
Well, I'll take over there. So, you know, I'm trying to bring it back to Wisconsin. This is an international issue. Of course, when people think of poaching and animal trafficking, you think of rhino horns, you think of, you know, organs from lions and tigers, etc. But are there any similarities between what wardens face here and in African nations with regard to poaching or trafficking?
Yes. You know, if you, for example, you know, I just, you know, that there's the bear gall trafficking, Totabata trafficking, there's illegal trafficking in other species that are taking place domestically in the U.S. The big case in Missouri a few years ago on paddlefish on the Missouri and Mississippi rivers, sea turtles out of Florida. This is something that is happening around the world, and in the United States, you know, it's happening here. And there are cases being made on it. Just this morning on our Facebook page, on NACLAC Facebook page, I posted about a smuggling case of some totabatas and abalone that on the U.S.-Mexican border from the state of Washington. So these things are happening both nationally and internationally. There are international connections. And when you look at it all, one of the things that we really came to understand that if we're going to make progress on this, we need to do a couple things. We really need to get shared understanding of the problem, both in law enforcement and the public, you know, because when the buying stops, the killing stops. And so if we can get people to understand, hey, don't either intentionally or unwittingly contribute to this by buying something that is going to contribute to it overall. And then to strengthen these international relationships, because if we can't get, you know, all of conservation law enforcement talking to each other, whether it's within the United States or globally, we're just not going to be as effective at combating this.
Randy, Dave Carlson here. Who pays for this? How do you go about recruiting your trainees, and what kind of training do they go through?
Yeah, so we have two different academies going on. Is our national academy, that's state law enforcement officers, and that's paid for through a combination of tuition by the state officers. The Fish and Wildlife Service helps us with lodging at the National Conservation Training Center, and then we pay for instructors, again, through the tuition, and our association also pays for a lot of our academies. So on the U.S. side, It's tuition, Fish and Wildlife Service helping with lodging, and then us paying for other expenses. On the international side, again, that's a collaborative effort between the Fish and Wildlife Service, our National Association of Chiefs, and INL through the State Department. So those are the three funding entities there. In terms of how they're chosen on the state side, I put a message out to state chiefs, kind of look at the people that are coming up in the ranks and their organizations and select people to come to our academy. On the international side, it's a pretty complex process where we make the opportunity available to a wide range of sub-Saharan African countries with the trafficked wildlife. It's sent out to the embassies, and each embassy then evaluates the opportunity and finds what they believe to be the best person to come to the training. And then they go through a process called Leahy vetting, which means that people are vetted to make sure that that they're the proper person to come to this type of training, and then they eventually arrive here. So it's a fairly long process. It takes over a year to plan, and so it's a big deal.
With that, let's take our first break. We're talking about a Wisconsin connection, Randy Stark, that is, to an international effort to better equip game wardens from Africa, the U.S., Southeast Asia, around the world in the fight against poaching and animal smuggling. I'm Rich Kramer, and we'll be back with more of this discussion right after this.
Support for WPR comes from The Ridges in Bailey's Harbor, Door County, celebrating its 80th anniversary, open year-round. Now featuring a 1/3 mile accessible boardwalk. Information is at ridgessanctuary.org. Support also comes from UW Eau Claire Continuing Education, offering a master's in professional development through education studies. One Saturday a month, the rest is online. uwec.ly/MEPD.
You're listening to a special edition of the West Side Outside on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm joined by the outdoor guys, Joe Knight and Dave Carlson, along with special guest for this first half hour, Randy Stark. He is a former head game warden for Wisconsin, who is now director of the National Association of Conservation Law Enforcement Chiefs. The goal is to help train wardens from around the world to fight poaching and animal trafficking. 1-800-228-5615 is the number to call in if you've got a question or a comment. 1-800-228-5615. Joe Knight.
Randy, the fellow from Cameroon we heard at the top of the show was fairly hopeful and optimistic. But is there really reason for hope and optimism? All the numbers sound very bad when we look at the populations of elephants, say, or rhinos 10 years ago versus what we have seen over the last couple of years. Are we going to see elephants go extinct during our lifetime, African elephants, or are you optimistic?
I'm very optimistic. I think people are starting to recognize the gravity of this issue. They just did this Africa-wide elephant census that now have a baseline to, for instance, with elephants to understand what the population is and have a baseline to balance against. But I think the biggest thing is that, you know, when you can start to penetrate public awareness of this, and there are a lot of NGOs around the world working on this, like Chris said, it takes a lot of people working on this to make it successful, law enforcement to stop the, you know, criminal activity. There's also on both ends, whether it be the source side or the demand side, it's, you know, the economics of it. You know, we're a lot of in Africa now, there's a lot of tourism built around the fact that these iconic animals do exist, and there's economies obviously built up around that, and so that's a big part of it. And having people really becoming aware that the last thing we want is to have our grandkids having to learn about elephants or rhinos, you know, on Wikipedia as something that used to be. And so I think you're seeing some significant movements. And one example of that is, you know, I think China in this coming last year announced that they'll be banning the overt trade of ivory. That's a big deal to have a country, you know, step forward and say, hey, we're gonna ban that. Of course, there's still going to be, you know, trade that's, you know, under the table, quote unquote, that will always be there no matter what. But we need to keep working on that. But when you see countries starting to come together and you see NGOs coming together, that's a very good sign that, you know, things are changing. There's a lot of work to do. For example, in 2018, we're going to do this an ICCA with Asian countries, because our ultimate goal is we've got to bring the source and demand conservation law enforcement entities together. So we'll be working with Asia in 18, and our ultimate goal is to bring Asia and Africa together and with the U.S. and other countries. So this is truly a global reach in conservation law enforcement to make progress on this, because it's really going to take that with the sophistication of the trafficking and the corruption that's involved and all of that. It really requires a collective effort.
Now, bringing, you know, getting Asian countries involved in this, it sounds like that could be a big deal because, and it, maybe this is my own ignorance talking here, but a lot of times when you hear about certain organs and certain, it's described as being used in certain types of medicine or healing concoctions used in Asian countries. Is that true?
That is one of the demands for it is that, yes. And this becomes, you know, the issue there is whether it's for medicinal purposes, aphrodisiacs, or in sometimes, it, you know, a status symbol. If you have a certain piece of ivory or what have you, there's certain symbolic status that goes with that. So there's cultural aspects, and this is where we come into the adaptive leadership part of, you know, how do we change the thinking on some of those things that maybe there's other ways that you can avail yourself of those the benefits, whether they be real or perceived, of those animal parts, and actually flip the culture so that, you know, if you're someone that actually has one of those things, whether it be a piece of ivory or what have you, that rather than being a status symbol, it may be a symbol of your ignorance, that you don't understand the implications of what happens in order for that to show up on your table. And so you're seeing some movement on that, particularly in younger generations and, you know, in a number of the Asian countries, a lot of the NGOs are focusing on the younger generations to kind of educate them. And there's a lot of younger celebrities that are doing public service announcements and trying to change that thinking about that. So I'm very hopeful about that because there's a lot of big change going on. And so the next, you know, the other piece of that is on the source side, we've got to kind of make sure that we're trying to educate people about why it's not a good idea to do this. It's not in your best interest to be involved in this. And then we've got to catch the people and have some significant penalties for those who are involved in trafficking.
So the International Conservation Chiefs Academy, I saw some dates on the Facebook page and on the website, September 9th through the 22nd. Could you give us a brief, you know, we're right up against the end of the segment, but could you give us a brief explanation of what these folks will do in D.C. and also in Denver, Colorado?
Yes. So what we're up against here are, you know, is trafficking issue. So we come in and we start to do some leadership development training with folks right away. We take them into Washington, D.C. to the Interior Building and orient them to D.C. and some of the monuments there in terms of, you know, a little bit of the history of this country. We take them to the Natural History Museum at the Smithsonian, and then we end up at the National Geographic Society headquarters where we have a discussion about some of the biggest challenges we face in trafficking that evening. Then we talk about the economics of wildlife crime and different programs that the United States has that might be useful. Meanwhile, the whole time it's designed to integrate the U.S. and African leadership academies so that they're developing the relationships that we want to come out of that. There's forensic courses on forensics, evidence management. We're taking them to the Rocky Mountain National Wildlife Refuge and to the repository where they can see all the seized animals there, where they come from, what the stories, how they're trafficked. So they can help on our end, and we're sharing case studies from the U.S. and so it's a pretty jam packed agenda. They are up and going from 7 a.m. until 9-10 at night every day that they're here, and we try to get the most out of their time here.
It sounds like a great program. I'm going to list some of the countries that are participating this year: African nations, Chad, Guinea, Togo, Cameroon. Gabon, I'm probably mispronouncing that, but Uganda, Kenya, Zambia, etc. It sounds like a really cool program, and Randy Stark, thanks for sharing with us about the International Conservation Chiefs Academy, and best of luck with this year's Academy beginning September 9th.
Yeah, thank you very much. And if people want to follow along, we're going to be kind of posting some events on our NACLAC Facebook page. So follow along on there and see what's happening.
All right. Randy Stark is the director of the He's the executive director of the National Association of Conservation Law Enforcement Chiefs. Apologize for that, Randy. And he also is a former head warden, lead warden for Wisconsin. Now we are going to
Folks want to follow that Facebook page, well, maybe we can get Rich to post it on the public radio website.
I'll do it. And again, thanks for that, Randy. And now we are going to transition from the International Gathering of Game Wardens in Washington, D.C. and Denver. And then we're going to bring the focus back to Wisconsin. In April, a group of retired DNR and UW scientists formed a group to respond to what they saw as a crisis at the Department of Natural Resources. The group is called Green Fire, Wisconsin Green Fire. And we'll talk about it with two board members. We're going to learn about the efforts, the goals for the rest of the hour. So now I'd like to welcome those guests. First, George Meyer. He is the executive director of the Wisconsin Wildlife Federation currently. He's a former DNR secretary, and now he's a board member with Green Fire. George Meyer, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much for having me.
Our pleasure. Also joining us by phone is Nancy Larson. She is a former leader of the Department of Natural Resources Northern Water Program, and she is also a board member with Green Fire. Nancy Larson, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Rich.
Listeners, if you want to call in with a question or a comment, give us a ring at 1-800-228-5615. That number again is 1-800-228-5615. And I'm going to start off with a question that I actually got about Green Fire this morning from Linda in Birchwood. She called and wanted to know whether or not Green Fire would be holding any training sessions for citizens interested in giving effective testimony during public hearings locally or in Madison. She was speaking specifically about the rise of sand mining and about how there are often people that testify at the public hearings, but maybe not as effectively as they could. Will Green Fire be offering any kind of training for folks that want to get up behind the mic, either in Madison or locally at their town or county boards?
And Nancy, why don't you give that a shot?
Sure, George. Well, that's an excellent question. And I'd like to start by saying that Green Fire is a very new organization. We're just kind of getting ourselves up and running. We're actually having our first membership meeting in early September. And we're an organization of volunteers, and so we're figuring out exactly what issues we're going to work on and how we can best bring our experience and talents to bear. We are very concerned. We don't want to duplicate the efforts of any other group, and so Linda's question is a good one, but I can see that as probably in the wheelhouse of other conservation groups. We haven't entertained that particular idea yet, but I can certainly bring that to the board. We're seeing ourselves primarily as a group that can provide information to citizens, to decision makers, to legislators, and other environmental and conservation groups. You know, based on our knowledge and experience, and we want to work with other conservation organizations, but certainly not duplicate what they're doing.
All right.
We might mention to Linda, the League of Conservation Voters and Wisconsin River Alliance are involved in that kind of training for people who want to write a letter to the editor or maybe speak up at a hearing.
Excellent. Linda, if you're listening, League of Conservation Voters and Wisconsin River Alliance. Great. When did Green Fire form? I mean, if you're going to have your first meeting with members in early September, but you know it's already the cat's out of the bag. There was an article posted recently, and what is the goal and what directly are you responding to, George Meyer? I'll start with you.
Yes, this has been an issue that I think has been in, bubbling up among former conservation employees, whether they be state employees, federal employees, or professional academics, for quite a while. And finally, a group of individuals decided to bring, I think it was last February, a number of invite a lot of these individuals together to have a meeting and sort of a weekend to discuss what could be done to sort of fill the void to provide sound professional scientific information to policymakers, whether they be at the Natural Resources Board, the legislature, or even at a local level. And at that meeting, there was a decision. This was important, and there was a great commitment to do so. And a interim board was formed, has done a great deal of work. Nancy and several of the other individuals have done fantastic work of putting together the bylaws, pick some prior, or looking at some priority issues, and just forming the organization so it is a solid base. And as a result of that, as Nancy mentioned, early in September, actually it's next week, will be the first meeting of the organization, membership organization. They'll elect a new board, decide formally what issues to tackle. But it is really to fill the void, since for the last 3 years, the Department of Natural Resources has really stepped back from providing policymakers with scientific information at public and legislative hearings. Often at times, there's felt that some of the information that provided by the professionals at DNR is not taken or is modified or prevented from going forward at the Natural Resources Board. And this is to provide the opportunity for experienced, credible scientists to provide information on key environmental issues in the state.
Okay. George, why did the organizers choose the name Green Fire?
Well, let me toss that back to Nancy.
Sure. So there was actually some internal debate about the name because maybe it sounds a little green. But, you know, on the other hand, we're hearkening back to our conservation heritage in the state of Wisconsin, a very proud heritage. And one of the real leaders of that is Aldo Leopold, you know, one of the founders of conservation biology as a as an academic study. And we decided to really embrace that and that our mission is to carry on that tradition of good information to help people make good decisions about natural resource information. And so we took the term from one of Dr. Leopold's essays, and we decided that we would be Wisconsin's Green Fire, Voices for Conservation. I think that we can also consider ourselves to be voices of experience because we are primarily retired natural resource professionals, attorneys, communications professionals, and university researchers. So we bring a lot of experience to the table.
What's been the reaction of the DNR?
Well, let me first answer that. The question was, I had his mic muted accidentally, but that was Dave Carlson wondering what the reaction of the DNR was. I invited them to this program, and they said they declined to participate and declined comment. But I don't know if Nancy or George has had any communications with DNR.
Have you picked up on anything like that?
I have not, and I don't know if Nancy has, but I can tell you, and representing the organization I'm executive director for, Wisconsin Wildlife Federation, I attend a lot of these legislative hearings. DNR's absent. There's a lot of questions from legislators, and they'll ask other people there and will not have the experience of DNR staff providing that information. I can tell you from talking to frontline staff at DNR very frequently, they truly appreciate outside organizations bringing forth information that, unfortunately, they're prevented from bringing forward at public meetings and public hearings.
As a reporter who used to cover the DNR quite a bit and still does a little bit, I can say I've seen a change in recent years, maybe dating back to the mid-90s, but certainly under Governor Doyle, I can remember calling up usually if I had a local deer question, I called the local wildlife manager. If I had a statewide, I'd call down to Madison. All of a sudden, all my calls were being routed through a young guy who sounded like he had a poli-sci degree, and he would decide whether or not I could go ahead and talk. And it's only gotten worse under Governor Walker. There's basically a gag order on... We just had a hearing involving the job of Wisconsin game wardens, and no other than retired game wardens who went down, there was no game warden who testified. So this is a real welcome. And the other thing is that George Meyer isn't going to live forever. I could always get a quick comment from Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce. They would get back to me within a half hour with a very anti-regulatory viewpoint, very well thought out. But getting a hold of someone at DNR or getting a hold of someone, a volunteer with an environmental group. And if I could get a hold of George, he not only has lived all this conservation history, but he has a really good memory for dates and things. But if he was over at the Capitol at a hearing, I was out of luck. So I'm really glad that reinforcements are on the way and that we'll have some other scientists who we can hopefully get a hold of.
Terry Dalton speaking at the Wisconsin Outdoor Communicators a couple of weeks ago, indicated that they may be hiring an executive director, that being the only full-time position.
Yeah, if I can add to that, I think that would be our desire to do that, but we would need to do a fair amount of fundraising before that would be possible. But certainly what we have found out is that there is a lot of demand for our services, and when we put out our press release in April to coincide with Earth Day, we were deluged with contacts, and it was actually more than we could handle as volunteers. So we appreciate everyone's patience in working with us, but we heard from a lot of citizens and a lot of groups asking for our help. And so we feel kind of bad saying, yeah, we're still organizing and we're not quite ready, but we're laying a good foundation and trying to get a good breadth of volunteers. And our press release back in April helped to raise that profile so more people came forward and have come forward to join the organization. So, you know, we're getting to have a good cadre of folks.
Your membership meeting is early September, the 8th and the 9th, but where?
In Baraboo at the Aldo Leopold Foundation. We thought that would be fitting for our first meeting.
With that, let's take our first break. The outdoor guys have a lot more questions, as do I. And listeners, if you have a question about the Green Fire volunteer group that's offering assistance to the Department of Natural Resources, give us a call, 1-800-228-5615. We can take your call. Otherwise, you can post it on the Westside Facebook page. And if you have missed part of the program or would like to listen again, check out the online archives. You can go to WPR.org, search for the West Side, and you'll find years worth of programs. We'll be back with more discussion from George Meyer of the Wisconsin Wildlife Federation and Nancy Larson, former DNR Northern Region Water Program leader, right after this.
Hey, Wisconsin, I'm Joshua Johnson, the host of 1A from WAMU and NPR. Join me this afternoon as we take an honest look at America, bringing context and insight to stories unfolding across the country and around the world. Politics, technology, pop culture, you'll find them all on 1A, Monday through Thursday afternoons at 1, here on the Ideas Network.
The Chippewa Valley Writers Guild presents Supper Time in Lake Wobegon, an evening with Holly Harden at Forage in Eau Claire, Saturday, September 16th. Harden was a Prairie Home Companion writer and has authored similar-themed cookbooks. Details at cvwritersguild.org.
You're listening to The West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for joining us this Monday morning. We're talking about game wardens and conservation and all of the above. this hour on the West Side. For the first half, we spoke with Randy Stark, former lead warden for Wisconsin, who now directs an international warden exchange program. For the second half, we are talking about Green Fire. It is a volunteer group made up largely of retired DNR staff and scientists that whose goal is to help the agency with enforcement, basically. They're acting as watchdogs and eyes and ears for the agency. Joining me to discuss that and the outdoor guys, we've got Joe Knight and Dave Carlson, along with George Meyer, who is a board member of Green Fire, and Nancy Larson, who is also a board member. If you've got a question or a comment, 1-800-228-5615 is the number to call. And I do want to go straight to the phone. We've got Linda on. Linda, I did ask you a question a little while ago, but Linda and Birchwood, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Good morning. I want to put a plug in for the advocacy workshop that the Wisconsin River Alliance and Wisconsin Lakes Associations has been putting on over the last year or so.
Okay.
I took that training at the Spooner Ag Station, and it was a wonderful, wonderful way to learn about more effectively writing those letters to the editor or providing testimony, say, when there are rule or statute changes.
Okay.
My question was more specific to citizens being able to navigate the regulatory process on specific issues, say, for instance, changes in WPDES permitting or reclamation plans. And it's just a whole education process that I think discourages people. And I don't know that any of the good organizations we have that level of detail, where I was hoping somebody like Nancy Larson with a regulatory background could help provide some understanding to the public about, you know, how do you request that public hearing? What testimony is the DNR allowed to consider? Because a lot of it they can't as a permitting agency. So that was the nature of my question. And, yes, I would like to say that some of the general programs that are going on are wonderful.
Excellent. Well, thanks for that, Linda. Thanks for clearing up my butchering of your the generalization of what you called about earlier. But Nancy Larson, Lord knows the discharge, you know, the regulations, the statutes, it makes a lot of people's eyes glaze over. So will Green Fire offer any kind of training on that?
Well, Linda, again, thank you for that point. And I think it is a good one. A service that I think we can provide is giving people information on how best to ask your questions, what the steps in the process are. If you're not getting that information from the regulatory agencies, I think that's an area where we can provide information. And so the best form to do that, we'll need to work that out. But again, thank you for that comment, and it's good food for thought for me. I appreciate it.
All right, thanks for that, Linda. Anyone else, if you've got a question or a comment, give us a call at 1-800-228-5615. I saw somewhere, and maybe if this was in the article written by Patrick Durkin for the USA Today network of newspapers, but there was some discussion as to Green Fire members being able to offer comment to the press regarding DNR decisions or enforcement actions or whatever. Did I read that right? Because, I mean, would the agency want a volunteer group of retired staff speaking on behalf of it today?
Can I answer that, Rich?
Yeah, please do, Nancy.
Yeah, we would not speak for the DNR. We would not attempt to do that. We're not a shadow DNR. We're a separate organization. And so we may decide to take positions on certain issues and come out with position papers or media release, but we certainly will not be speaking for the agency.
Okay. And there was a couple
people. Who will be your spokesperson?
Who
will be your spokesperson?
Has that been decided yet?
What we've been doing so far is having board members act as our spokespeople, but we'll be working out our specific procedures in the coming weeks.
I think a couple of the more public faces so far have been Bob Martini and
Terry Dalton.
And Terry Dalton, right.
If I can put in a plug, it'd be great for journalists if we could. I used to rely heavily on George Meyer as the executive director of Wisconsin Wildlife Federation, but if we could have a few more people out there, too, that we could reach on short notice who would have some background in this, in the ongoing things, that would be a big help.
Are you going to be on call, Nancy, 24/7?
I think we'll work that out. We have talked about having a speakers bureau, and we're asking our members if they're interested in that activity. So we would envision having a list of people who have backgrounds on certain issues who have expressed willingness to serve as spokespersons serve as sources of information. And then, you know, who would be a spokesperson on behalf of the Wisconsin's Green Fire Organization? We'd work that out probably issue by issue.
We talked a little bit about the testifying or lack of the current DNR staff testifying, whether they're being told not to or not, on legislation that would impact the DNR. Will it be the same kind of impact if a retired DNR member speaks to an issue like the Open Fields Doctrine legislation that we'll probably be asking about in just a second? But does it have this carry the same kind of weight? And that could be for Nancy or George.
George, you've done a lot of testifying. Do you want to take that?
He may have jumped off the call. 1-800-228-5615. is the number to call if you've got a question or a comment for Nancy Larson. Looks like we lost George Meyer. But Nancy is a former DNR leader of the Department of Natural Resources Northern Water Program. It is a huge, complicated area, especially with regard to discharges. George Meyer was with us. I don't know if we lost his connection. He is the executive director of the Wisconsin Wildlife Federation, currently former DNR secretary. We're talking about Green Fire. It is a volunteer group made up of largely of retired DNR scientists that are hoping to help the agency. And I'm wondering, Nancy Larson, I'll ask you this. Do you think that, there's been a lot of press about the DNR being short-staffed or being scaled back for political reasons. Do you think that the average citizen has been able to notice a difference, or is it just people in the media that follow this stuff obsessively? Or former staff members that also follow it, maybe more than the average Joe or Jill?
So in my experience, people may not realize that the lack of service or the cutback in service is due to the budget cuts to the agency, but I would say that people, certainly regulated community, has experienced that decrease in the ability to provide service or answer phone calls in a timely manner because our staff are my former staff were simply stretched too thin. So I think that decrease in service and responsiveness is definitely there. Whether people realize the cause of it, that I'm not sure.
Nancy, I have a couple current issues we've been writing about. One is the loss of the forestry mill tax. I don't know if you're tracking that. And another has to do with kind of rolling back some of the state's mining laws regarding mining and sulfide ore deposits. Is this something that Green Fire will be taking a position on or currently discussing?
Yeah, we are currently discussing those issues, and we have members who are very interested and have some background in that, so we're certainly looking into those.
Nothing you can tell us right now?
Not yet. No, thank you.
Oh, I see. So as this, you mentioned funding for a possible position, a full-time position. That's a ways off. But you mentioned it would be strictly donations based. I mean, what kind of groups are you hoping to appeal for funding for something like this?
So our memberships are coming from individuals, from people who are going to be acting as professional members to be on working committees. We're also getting donations from the public, which is very much appreciated to support our work. And as we get ourselves kind of up and running, we'll be looking at various foundations or grants to see if we can get some larger funding to support our work. So at this point, it's a bit of a shoestring, but we want to be sure that we're maintaining our independence, not be beholden to any particular organization. So we're very careful about that. That's part of our mission statement, is that we are an independent organization to provide independent information.
All right, and we're getting very close to the top of the hour. Joe is just crashing into the microphone over here. I apologize for that. This is kind of a touchy question, but I need to ask it. With all this discussion, with the formation of Green Fire in response to this perceived issue at the DNR, do you think that the governor, Scott Walker, and Republicans in the legislature have been trying to purposely weaken the DNR?
I guess I couldn't say, but what I would say is clearly the if you follow the money and you look at the cutbacks in funding for state agencies, especially the Department of Natural Resources and the university, it certainly curtails the ability to do a good job. The other thing is I feel a lot of loyalty, and I know all of our members do too, to the organizations they came from and their colleagues, and we're not trying to badmouth any of those organizations. We just say that clearly there's been an effort to kind of decrease the information getting out to people, to the media, and that's where we feel that we can at least step in with our experience and help. Certainly we can't supplant what the agencies need to do, but we have the experience to help somewhat.
All right, Nancy Larson, thank you so much. Nancy is a board member for Green Fire. George Meyer was also a board member for Green Fire. We lost him due to a bad connection. We got some hunting seasons coming up. Who wants to rapid fire within
a quick tell people about the duck stamp, Judge?
Yeah, the duck stamp competition is going to be in Wisconsin at Stevens Point September 15th over at the Edna Carlson Art Gallery. That's a Friday, and it's open to the public. It's a heck of a way to start the fall hunting season off.
All right, we're out of time. Sorry to put you on the spot, Dave. Thank you for all of our guests for their discussion this hour. We'll be back next Monday morning. This is the West Side.